Welcome to the Joanne Averson podcast. Today's episode, Competitive or Collective, is really about a principle that is fundamental to understanding body wisdom. But it's one that I think we can grasp if we start with defining those two words and then look at different ways of seeing how they make sense in the world and how they make sense of our own inner ability to discover and uncover and reveal what's inside us, what it means, and how we optimize our best movement practices, manual practices, and so on. And it's a theme that's run very deep with me for many, many years, and I'm sharing it with you because competitive versus collective, they're not really direct comparisons, but they serve this purpose and they make a difference in how we teach movement, in how we serve our clients in manual therapy, and I actually think in how we serve each other. And because of that, for me, it's very much part of our bio-emotional intelligence to honor the understanding of the difference between these two things and to check in with ourselves that we're not in competition with ourselves in a way that's detrimental to the collective ability of all of us within us, with the parts of us within ourselves, to make sense of what we're doing. And if that sounds a little tiny bit mysterious, I'm going to unravel it. But first of all, let's start in one of my favorite places, which is with a very simple definition of these two words. Competitive, if you look it up, basically means as good as or better than others of a comparable nature. As good as or better than others of a comparable nature. Now, in the movement field, that is exemplified by, for example, elite athleticism, where someone competing for a place in the Olympics or the Paralympics or any form of race is competing with themselves. We make such a big thing out of personal bests and so on. But they're also competing with others to achieve rank so that their performance is as good as or better than others of a comparative nature. We could go down lots of rabbit holes with this one, but I want to stick to this main theme because I want to consider next the definition of the collective. The definition of collective is done by people as a group, a cooperative enterprise. And for me, that is a very different and, as I said earlier, not necessarily directly comparable consideration in the sense that it isn't either collective or competitive. But I want to consider it in the context, first of all, of the human body. Is your body fighting itself for recognition, for achievement, for something, a standard that it compares itself with, like we compare ourselves with our performance last year? We compare our achievements with how we did last time or before an event or after an event. But it's innate. It's innate to our language and our appreciation. And is there a value in simply recognizing this slightly different context of collective, cooperative enterprise? Now, why is this such an important theme in bodywork? Well, straight away, we are still under the powerful spell of the historical metaphor of 400 years of studying movement and manual therapy as they've emerged from the study of medicine, based in understanding the individual parts of the human body. And that analysis, and this is absolutely foundational to the way books are written of all kinds, you know, highly academic, semi-academic, everything is written about body parts. It's deep to the language of most body disciplines. For example, we isolate parts in order to train them. In yoga, we do postures that focus on something in order to achieve this with these parts. For example, yesterday I was in a coaching call where we were talking about a pose called dragon pose and another one called flying dragon, both of which are very extreme. Now, they're not part of the yoga world that I studied in. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. I don't mean that for a minute. But there's a lightness. It's not the same, but there's a lightness to King Pigeon, which is in Sanskrit, Ekapada Raja Kapatasana. I love that phrase. It's one of the few Sanskrit names I really learned. And at its most extreme, it focuses on the deep, deep muscles of the hip and pelvis. And in many ways, when it's forced or in any way seen as a goal, as if you're in competition with your own ability to do it or not, can be very detrimental to the organization of the pelvis. Why do I say that when I'm a yoga teacher and a yoga therapist? Well, because some of the things the Western world has done with yoga are less than optimal when we consider these as individual goals to compete with ourselves and our ability. Now, here's where we're going to go subtle. Ekapada Raja Kapatasana. Raja means king. Raja is royal. Ekapada, king pigeon. I love that. The human body is designed to fold and unfold and find stillness and move into it and move out of it. And for many people, working towards a pose as beautiful as King Pigeon, and it is beautiful, is a wonderful project to bring them into awareness, to find a quality of motion in the pelvis, in the spine, with the breath, to discover an ability to reach particular folds and shapes in the body that can invite freedom and invite a focus for the mind while we bring ourselves into these beautiful folds and stillness. However, very often they become a purpose in and of themselves. And one finds oneself in a situation where, as a teacher, you can look around the room and see individual people on their yoga mats comparing their king pigeon to the next person's king pigeon. And that comparison is causing issues. That comparison is causing them to focus their ability outward to another person, to feed back and grade themselves in competition with. And the question they're asking themselves, whether they distinguish it or not, is, am I as good as the others of a comparable nature? Now, I would suggest that might not be the most useful way to explore a pose, particularly one as demanding as that. And obviously, I'm using it somewhat metaphorically and symbolically as a way of practically illustrating these two words, the comparative and the collective. And the other way of looking at it is, can we see this posture, for example, as a collective awareness that the group are playing with and see how the body cooperatively, with total appreciation for the spine, for the breath, for the uprightness or not, for the experience, the inner experience of all the aspects of it coming together. Can we regard such a thing in a collective way and really profoundly experience in present time how we as a whole feel? And rather than grading ourselves comparatively with how we did it before, how the person on the next mat is doing, how the teacher wishes we could do it, how the perfect form suggests it should be done. Rather, an inner awareness of, oh, look, when I do this with a bolster for support so I'm not straining, I can fold my left leg really easily in front of me and extend my right. But when I try to do it the other way around, I can't fold my right leg and extend my left because I had an injury or because it's not very comfortable. And we find this honest dialogue through the collective awareness of considering everything with equal respect, with equally collaborative wonder. And what do I mean by that? Well, do you do your yoga or your Pilates or your Tai Chi or whatever your movement practice is, your daily walk with your dog, wondering how it's going to be today? Or do you do it to just, oh God, get me out of the house? Or do you do it out of a duty, got to walk the dog because the dog needs a walk, rather than because you want one? Or do you do your postures compared to the other person? Or if you're a teacher of movement, do you simply teach what you're trained to teach? Now, why would I choose this theme? Well, because it's not just personal. It's a professional theme. I think it's really fundamental to how we teach and cue movement and give manual therapy and guidance to our manual therapy clients. But I also think it's a huge deal in terms of our cultural consciousness. And I'm very privileged to have been invited to speak at the Move Better, Feel Better Summit organized by the Feldenkrais Movement. Because as you will have gathered from my podcast with Cynthia Allen, who is the founder of this absolutely superb summit, it's free, by the way, for goodness sake, don't miss it. Such an opportunity. Is that Cynthia and I both resonate in exactly the same way with this idea that the different movement modalities are not in competition with each other, that there is far more for all of us to gain, learn, and evolve with if we work as a collective. And that deeply and genuinely means, deeply means, that everyone offers what they offer with confidence in what they're offering and confidence in the respectful listening of the others. If everybody does that, it reflects that same resonance field back of the collective listening. That's not to make competition wrong. It's to, in fact, remove this whole idea of right and wrong, them and us, right way of doing something, wrong way of doing something, good form, bad form. It kind of erases this polarity of either side of the line and brings us into this multi-dimensional possibility that everyone can grow. But what makes every single one of us the same is that we are all unique. And my invitation is, think about that. What makes you exactly the same as me? What makes me exactly the same as you, us, them? What makes every single one of us literally the same is that every single one of us is completely and utterly unique. So every single one of us is actually in a collective anyway. So the idea that we are competing with ourselves and with others in order to be as good as or better than, where did that come from? Goodness knows. Is that something we learned when we were kids? Is that something we learned in school? Well, yeah, maybe we did, because we used that to improve. We used it as a way of saying, wow, there's something more for me to learn. But can we go too far and imagine that we are only as good as that person, only as good as our personal best? Are we quantitatively measuring ourselves in what is actually a qualitative arena? And what I mean by that is, every single day, the quality of our movement is different. It depends on the weather, it depends on your nervous system, it depends on how much sleep you did or didn't get, it depends on who's around you, it depends on the resonance field at the time. it's always unique. And one of the things that yoga is designed to do, I'm not making it better or worse than anything else, but one of the things all movement is designed to do is bring us into present time, bring us into presence so that we can collect our thoughts, we can collect our awarenesses, we can collect the moment and be present to it. Can we collectively, as a cooperative enterprise within ourselves, work all parts of ourselves together and just give ourselves time to do that for the sake of it, for the love of it? Because the truth is, we began whole and complete. Jaap van der Wal describes us as a unicellular being for that moment in time that we are. And that unicellular being becomes, each one of us becomes, out of this incredible combination of the growing process, pre-embryonic stage, the embryonic stage, the fetal stage, the neonate, the baby, the toddler, the child, adolescent, the young adult, the maturing adult, the elder. All of those stages, we are a collective. And we form the parts of us physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, as we go and grow as a collective. And sometimes I wonder if it serves us to remember that we can compete with ourselves to improve, but can we let go of that and drop it back into the collective out of the joy and the awareness that that's what we are anyway? And this theme is very dear to me. So I really loved talking with Cynthia Allen about the Feldenkrais Summit because she talked so eloquently about the culture of different movement modalities and how they all come together to benefit all of us as a collective so much more powerfully than if yoga competes with Pilates or Pilates competes with Feldenkrais. Is it valuable to us to take a breath and imagine that when we only work competitively, and we're more prone to do that than we think, I think, it's almost like wearing a uniform. And it's great while you're wearing that uniform to be aware of that and uphold the highest ideals and do it to your best ability. But does it work really beautifully to take off that uniform sometimes and just put on your cozy scruffs and listen out for lots of other things as well? Not to be brilliant at them too. You can still have your favorites, right? But to be really at ease with the core fundamentals that you may find an idea in another modality that collectively enhances what you're doing. I mean, even think about training. I work with some elite swimmer athletes. And I'm often saying to them, do you do anything other than swimming? Oh yeah, we go to the gym. Okay, great. But what about going for a walk? Or why would I do that? Somebody said that to me and I'm like, hang on a second, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you just get your body moving and breathing beautifully? Are you doing turning and twisting movements playfully in the pool? Do you play in the pool? Oh no, I just practice my turns. Well, what if playing in the pool really helped your turns to improve? Do you see what I mean? So you're teaching yourself and treating yourself to this collective awareness. And another area that we get into this is food these days is, and I'm not going there, don't worry, don't go, oh God. But you know, this idea that you're better if you're vegetarian or you're better if you're carnivore or you're better if you're vegan or whatever. These are factions of comparative values. I'm not making any of them wrong. I'm not making any of them right. I'm suggesting that they are collective ways of working. And it might be super valuable to try different ones at different times. But by honoring the inner message and the inner awareness, we can choose what works best for us at the time without hampering ourselves by reducing ourselves down to my way's the way. Maybe there's a number of ways that we can incorporate, which means embody, to find out. And I just want to say thank you to everybody in the Move Better, Feel Better Summit, because I'm sure you can imagine there's a lot of contributing players in this, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. And I'm super excited that Neil Thies is going to be the keynote speaker, because if anyone is devoted to the collective consciousness and raising the game for everybody, it's Neil. And I just want to say thank you, because the whole principle that so many people are devoted to it, and it's available to everybody free of charge, just completely embodies this collective cultural consciousness on the planet that's growing. I think it will save the planet. And I live in a place where that's a possibility. I invite you to consider that it comes down to each one of us being aware that there is a difference between competition and collection or collectiveness, and maybe invite something you've never done before into your world, just to take a moment to collect your thoughts and your feelings and your style and see if it enhances it. I think we sometimes get driven by perfection, and there's a beautiful ancient wisdom, I believe it's Tibetan, where when they make a carpet, even if it's perfect, they sew in or stitch in an imperfection so that it's more real. And then collectively, it reflects human nature in its perfect imperfection. I love that. Do you know what I mean? And it's not great, big and extraordinary. It's very, very ordinary. And it's in there, if we quietly go through and consider what we can try out, what we can collect, and then we can sort through and find out what's treasure and what isn't for us on that day. Magic happens. Stay safe. God bless you. And have a great week.